produced at KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon. I've been here with candidates for District 3, Brian Connolly and John Sweeney. You can find all of the episodes of Running On Air on the KBOO website. That's kboo.fm/runningonair. Episodes are also available wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you to all the KBOO volunteers who helped to make this happen. Our engineer and producer is Althea Billings, and our editor is Eric Loeschner. Tune in to the next episode of Running On Air. It will be with candidates from District 4 at 9 a.m. tomorrow. I've been your host, Corey Ilya. Thank you for listening.
Listener-supported community radio, KBOO, Portland, Oregon, in the beautiful Willamette Valley.
We invite you to participate in our brand new public affairs program, Once Upon a Time. Share with us your memories and touchstone events of your life, of your journey. Join us first and third Friday of the month from 11 to noon. Here on KBOO 90.7 FM and available online at kboo.fm. Consuelo is my name, and I will be glad to hear from you and reminisce about your journey. Once Upon a Time, live in the air room here at KBOO 90.7 FM. Share with us your memories, experience, and journey of your life. First and third Friday of the month, from 11 to noon, here at KBOO 90.7 FM.
Support for The Dirt Bag comes from KBOO listeners and from One Green World, a family-owned nursery and garden center located in southeast Portland, providing fruiting trees and shrubs, berries, vines, unique citrus, nut trees, vegetables, and much more to people all over the United States. Information at www.onegreenworld.com.
The following program is a rebroadcast. Dates, times, and events mentioned in the following program have already occurred. Thank you for tuning in to KBOO Portland.
Well, dig this. It's the second Wednesday of the month at 11 o'clock. It's time for The Dirt Bag, a garden variety show. And look who's here. Mr. Jim Gilbert is back to my right.
So happy to be here, Glenn.
It's been a busy month for Jim, he tells me, and we'll hear about much of that. I'm sure it's been a busy month for you too, our listeners, as it's membership time. So some of you, I'm sure, have been going to your phones and computers to figure out a way to donate to this station. What are those three ways, Jim? We'll just tell you right off the bat, and then we'll get into what we're doing.
Sure. Well, you can go to kboo.fm/give, which is
easy.
Yeah, that's pretty darn easy. And for those that like to do texting, you can text KBOO to 44321. And I have no idea what will happen after you do that, but apparently that works. And for those of you who love to support the Postal Service, you can mail a check. And if anybody still has checks, to KBOO, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214.
You know, this doesn't really matter too much at all one way or the other, but it's been interesting to me that for long-time listeners or even short-time listeners will know I'm a beekeeper, produce honey, and my biggest account is a donut shop, and a wonderful donut shop, and they pay me every time I drop off honey, and I'm surprised at how many times they pay me with a check, that the workers, anybody can kind of write a check, but some of those workers have not ever filled out a check or have not for for many moons.
Yeah, businesses, you know, we are business, of course, too. We do a lot with checks, but credit cards are certainly very ubiquitous these days.
Yeah.
And other methods, well, I guess, as well.
This isn't a finance show, but I think that, and I think this is happening more and more, that students should be being taught, you know, just basic finance things, like, you know, there's fees involved with credit cards.
Yeah.
And when you're the buyer, you don't incur those fees.
I remember taking a class in high school on how to write a check.
Yeah, that was a few years ago.
A few years ago, yeah.
So, all right. Well, anyway, we're here to talk about gardening stuff, not to mention film stuff. Related, certainly. Jim will give us an update on the documentary, and that it had its premiere showing the last week.
Sunday.
And it was to, you know, invited the hottie tots around.
It was kind of a screening, too. I mean, we had never shown it to a group of people before, so we wanted to get reactions to it, and now we're working on making a few tweaks and changes, and I'll tell you a little bit more about that.
Well, that's a nice thing that you're able to do that, because you're working with the producer of this, or the engineer. What's Joe's title?
Well, Joe Wilson would be editor, and basically editor.
Yeah, Well, he has the capability to edit it.
He's an amazing guy, and his skills are incredible, and I'm happy to work with him.
Which reminds me to say that we will be back next month, but it'll be a live recording of the show. We'll do that a couple of weeks before that. Because we can't do it live in November, so we won't be able to take your calls. But we will be able to take your calls today, 503-231-8187. I'll give you a rundown of the show so you can look forward to what's coming up next. It's persimmon time.
Yep.
It's our plant of the month. We'll get more information on the Jim and Joe's documentary. I'll talk some about leaves. I'm thinking that it's probably about time next month, since we won't be able to take calls next month, that I might do my litany of there must be 50 ways to love your leaves. I try to do that every 3, 4, 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got a garden stumper at the bottom of the hour. We will tell you what we can still do in the garden and farm and what's going on to get ready for the prep, because prepping for the winter and spring, because what you do now makes a big difference about what happens in the spring in your garden there. Jim's been traveling here and abroad on olives, and so we'll get some update on what he's learned about olives and how that might affect what's available here. Our Dirtbag Dictionary term has to do with composting, the carbon to nitrogen ratio. And since we're talking about leaves, I thought we'd talk a little bit about composting there. And what's annoying me this month, I don't subscribe to any channels that would allow me to watch many sports events. But when I do, because I like to watch certainly duck football, and when it's on national television or broadcast television, ABC, whatever, it is just so hard to hear the announcers because either they have microphones in the crowd or they've got windows open to the crowd, and all you can hear is crowd noise and not the announcers. It annoys me. But that's neither here nor there today. It will be on Saturday, however. So, anyway, once again, if you have a gardening question, feel free to call and ask us, 503-231-8187. And if you're too shy, you can send an email to thedirtbag@kboo.org and ask the question, and we will answer that on the next show.
And it's really great to hear from listeners, so please don't hesitate to give us a shout.
Let me mention that we will have our three tunes, but we're only able to get to one of those last month, and so I'm just repeating those this month. So, because we had so many calls. So I appreciate that, and also persimmons.
Yeah.
Not ripe yet.
Oh, contraire.
Oh, you got some on?
Yes. Well, the big news this year for me, and I mean, I actually lost sleep over this. I was so excited that some years ago, we were able to import some varieties from Korea. That we have a friend there, and it was just exciting because they had their own persimmon breeding program there. And one of them, a variety we have called Cardinal. It's a new one, and sadly there's not a lot of them available right now. But by next year, for sure, we'll have a bunch of them. It's in what we call non-astringent. So you eat it like an apple. It doesn't have to get soft before you eat it. And it was ripe in mid-September.
Oh,
the first thing. I mean, I couldn't believe it. I've never seen a persimmon ripen so early, and it was at least 2 to 3 weeks before the next one. And in fact, we're still counting till the next early variety ripens. So it's a remarkable new one. And I'm like I said, I was like losing sleep thinking about maybe I'll get my grandson to help me and we'll plant a little orchard and market them in Portland or something someday. But it's pretty cool. Beautiful fruit too.
And they're orange, no doubt.
They're bright orange. Yeah.
And are they as flavorful as the other ones, or is there any?
They're good. Yeah, they're good. I mean, there's probably ones that might be a little bit better than that, but certainly not bad. And my grandkids were just visiting, and we ate a lot of them, sliced them up, and they scarfed them down.
So these are, you said they're astringent.
Non-astringent. Non-astringent. And, I want to make sure that listeners know, I mean, I like persimmons, and I've been growing them for a long, long time, and arguably persimmon is probably the most popular or widely grown fruit in the world, because you think of China, Japan, Korea, Vietnam, I mean, there's all of Asia, people grow persimmon trees, and the astringent varieties are also really good, and some people don't like that when they get soft like that. But I think they're wonderful.
Yes,
and I like them. I like them both ways. And I probably mentioned before on a show about something we learned at a persimmon conference in Spain in 2016, where they actually will take an astringent type, and this is a big thing in Spain, and they treat it with CO2. Mm. And they take the ripe persimmon, but it's not soft yet, and you can't eat it. And they put it in a chamber. Or we've done it in plastic bags, and with CO2 for 24 hours at 70 degrees, and it changes the texture of the fruit, and it makes a different fruit out of it. It's like a melon almost. It's like still, it gets a little soft, but really flavorful, really cool.
Did you say that it's ripe, but not
edible. That's right.
It's not edible. Why?
Because it's astringent.
Meaning that it would be too, it would pucker you up.
Yeah, you will regret it. In fact, I used to be frustrated and not happy, and I probably still am a little bit, about stores that sell, the Hachia variety, which is a nice, beautiful persimmon. If you go to a supermarket in November, you buy Hachia persimmons. there's no sign that on one, at least there hasn't been any kind of information that said, don't eat this right now.
Yeah.
You know, wait.
So we need a different word, really, because ripe implies that it's ready. So it's mature, or it's partially matured.
You call it
mature,
sure, if you want.
But it's inedible yet.
Not edible, yeah.
Yeah. Premature.
It's premature. There you go. Yeah. Premature fruit.
Looks good, but it's not ready to eat yet.
Yeah.
You're right. And so these, what did you call it? Jubilee? Diamond?
The new one is called Cardinal.
Cardinal, jeez.
But there are, I'm sure if you go to the One Green World website, you will see a lot of different varieties. And they have, I think, a few of the Cardinal as well. I've been doing persimmons for a long time, and I really, really like them. They don't get disease problems.
Yeah.
They're easy to grow.
Bird problems.
Well,
big bird problems in my neighborhood.
If they get ripe, soft, then the birds will eat on them. But if they're not soft, the birds won't bother them. So the non-astringent kind, you know, you pick those when they're not soft, and there's no issue with it.
Yeah.
And the other really neat thing about it is I think of persimmon as probably one of the most attractive and ornamental fruiting trees, because the beautiful fall color, the bright orange fruit, the leaves will fall eventually, and that orange fruit will hang on, and it's kind of like a special little holiday tree.
By that time, they're ripe. When the leaves are gone,
I would say
they're ripe.
If they're green on the tree and the leaves are gone, then they're not ripe.
Yeah.
They probably won't be. But that variety you wouldn't want to grow here anyway.
Yeah. Well, I'm seeing more and more persimmons in the neighborhood.
Neat.
Maybe just know what to look for, but...
Well, I, as I said, as you probably can tell, they're one of my favorite fruits, I'll talk about them as much as I can.
Yeah. Well, we'll move on now. Ty, are you ready for our first tune? Yeah. Okay. Good. Ty's ready. Well, just a little bit of setup here. It's the same theme as last month. And I'm just going to play the first tune again, which we did play last month, but it's worth playing again. And the theme is, it may not be COVID, meaning, you might have something else. Cutting into one of my instruments, trombone.
Did you play the trombone?
Did.
Oh.
Yep, played it for 50 years or 45 years, and then I changed over to the electric bass. Yep.
Amazing. I had no idea.
Well, that was Diane Schurer. blind player playing with the Count Basie Orchestra. Boy.
Pretty good.
Can they swing it?
Yeah. Huh.
Hit the groove there. Okay, well, we just want to remind you once again that we are in our membership drive now, and there are many ways that you can, well, at least three ways that you can donate. I don't know if we'd probably take you in person too, but we're not set up like we have been in the past when we've had our membership drives, when phones and people were all over the place and food was all over the place. But it's pretty easy. It's very easy to donate now. Go to kboo.fm/give. You can text KBOO to 44321. That's those five numbers, 44321. Hey, that's my password. No, it's not. And you can mail a check to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, or 97214. Okay, speaking of or, that's Oregon.
Yep.
Jim has spent, I don't know, 2 years, 3 years?
2019 we started.
Yeah, well, that's 4 years then.
Yeah.
On the documentary. What's it called?
An Oregon Story.
Yeah.
Saving Our Beaches, Farmland, and More. And it's an amazing story, really. And I'm just in awe of all the cool people we got to interview and honored by them. Some of, sadly, have passed away since we interviewed them. But so many, what inspired me to do the work on this, to do this film, was my realization a few years ago that there were a vast majority of Oregonians don't know this part of Oregon history and how Oregon became such a cool state, a great place to live, work, farm, and recreate. And there were some very far-sighted people who thought ahead and did the 50 years ago, actually, was the anniversary of Senate Bill 100, which created urban growth boundaries around Oregon cities, and a unique, very unique, groundbreaking measure that has never been equaled in the United States. And so, you know, when you drive outside of Portland or Salem or Eugene or Molalla or any town or city, incorporated town or city in Oregon, you don't drive into strip malls and subdivisions. You drive into agricultural land or forest land or something else, but not that kind of development that plagues so many other locations, states in America. So we started in 2019, Joe Wilson and I, working on this film. We stopped for a while because of the pandemic. We started again in January 2022 and traveled all around the state interviewing folks. Joe wrote the script. I edited it. We got Robert Liberty, one of the old timers around here who has been involved with this for years, to narrate it for us. And finally, after a lot of work, we showed it to a select group of people, primarily the people we'd interviewed and some other folks who were involved with land use planning, on Sunday, to acclaims. And it was an emotional experience, really, because Joe and I had never showed it to a group of people before. And you know, like, wow, we had no idea what the reaction would be.
And did they cheer? And
they clapped and they laughed and they, you know, it was. And there's some pretty amazing scenes in this film, I'm awestruck by, like I said, like one part. One of my best friends sadly left us in April, but Bill Bradbury, a former Secretary of State, in the early 1970s. After the Senate Bill 100 was passed, one of the organizations that was came out of that was called the Land Conservation and Development Commission, and they went around the state and talked to people about what they wanted to see in Oregon, what kind of planning, what did they want, and that was wasn't a top down thing, and Bill filmed it. And there's clips from his film in this documentary, which are just like, wow. I mean, it's really amazing, you know, to think about. But we're making some tweaks, and after showing it to these folks, we got some ideas about how we could do some improvements to it, make a few changes. We're working on that now, and we're hoping to start showing it in theaters. Possibly very early December, looks like the potential right now. And then eventually we'll have it online. But I would encourage listeners who are interested and would like to see it to go to www.anoregonstory, all together, A-N-O-R-E-G-O-N-S-T-O-R-Y, .com, and you can hear and watch a really inspiring trailer and also sign up for updates on when and where the film's going to be available. So www.anoregonstory.com.
Where do you anticipate it being? Do you have theaters lined up?
We don't have anything lined up yet, but we're just starting that process. That's our next project, uh-huh. and we're hoping the Hollywood Theater here in Portland for sure, Corvallis, Eugene, Salem. If we can get three of those, in December, that would be great, and then we'll be doing more in January after the holidays.
Yeah.
But I'd love to have it all over the state because it's not a political film. It doesn't, there's no alienation in it. It's not like, people are going to choose sides. I mean, unless you're a developer and you want to build houses on farmland, you're probably going to like the film.
How long is it currently?
Currently it's 100 minutes, but we're working on shaving that down a little bit.
Worked for Major League Baseball.
Yeah, well, it's really interesting, Glenn, because neither Glenn nor I had ever done anything like this. Glenn had experience.
Joe.
Sorry,
Joe.
Glenn, you're Glenn.
Not him, yeah.
Joe, you haven't done either. But Joe and I had not done anything like this. Joe had done other short video stuff, and his skills are amazing. And I should just mention his business, Bergman Productions. If anybody's interested in having video work done, his skills are incredible.
And listeners, if you've listened regularly for the last 3 years, you've heard Joe's, or I guess maybe he's talked some, but anyway, you've experienced his production because he recorded the shows, the Dirtbag shows, when we weren't in the studios.
That's right.
So he saved our butts.
Yep. Came out to the nursery. Glenn and I would get together with Joe and record the show, which was really a nice experience.
And that's what's going to happen next for next month too.
Yeah.
But we'll be recording a couple of weeks early, but that's all right. Yep. We can manage that. Yep. Okay, AnOregonStory. .com if you want to get more information.
Yep.
And I'm sure you'll be listing where it will be shown when you know that.
Yep, absolutely. And I've over the past few months, I've mentioned that I have a little flyer, that a handout that we've created, and I'd be happy to send that to folks. And you can write to me at my own personal email address if you'd like to get a copy, which is Jim. Jim at northwoodsnursery.com.
All right. Well, thanks, Jim. That's exciting, and we look forward to that.
Thanks, Glenn.
I presume it'll just be the regular theater admission.
We're not going to charge the theaters anything for the film, so it hopefully will be less expensive than a typical admission. And we want the theaters to, the ones that'll be showing it, to be able to make some money doing it, because they pay for their expenses.
Yeah.
But my goal is to just get this out to Oregonians, because I think, this is a way to, showing this and educating folks about it, it's a way to hopefully keep this system in place for decades to come, because it's really very important to our state.
Jim's too modest to say that at the Hollywood Theater that Jim will be supplying the concession stand with persimmons. No, that's not true either.
Well, I'd love to do it. That's a really good point, Glenn. We'll see what I've got in the way of fruit at that time.
If it was a bad film, although I can see the cartoon, throwing fruit at the screen.
Wouldn't that be an amazing draw, though, to have fruit? Maybe we'd have pineapple guava in early December. That would be fun.
Pawpaws will be over by then, probably.
Yeah, probably. But I'll see. I'll work on that one. Thanks.
All right. Okay. Well, let's... are we ready? Ty, you're probably ready for another tune. Yeah, okay. The first one, yes, Diane Schur, Caught a Touch of Your Love. Well, now we have the Steve Miller Band called, once again, the theme, It May Not Be COVID. This tune, You Got Me Dizzy.
Listen to me, baby. What I say is right. right, cause you got me dizzy. Yeah, you got me dizzy. Yeah, you got me dizzy, and I can't even see my way. Let me tell you, baby, what I say is true. Somebody in the way that I love you, cause you got me dizzy. Yeah, you got me dizzy. Yeah, you got me dizzy, and I can't even see my way.
Yeah. May not be COVID. He might just be in love. Stevie Guitar Miller. Okay, well, before we get to the garden stumper, I'll just give you a brief heads up on that leaves are now falling, and the leaves are probably the single best source of free nutrients for your garden. In fact, even if you had to pay for nutrients, you'd probably get more nutrients from... You couldn't buy what leaves can give you. You just have to compost them first. And I'll talk more about that a little bit next month, I think. But realize that even if you don't have leaves coming in your yard because you don't have deciduous trees, everybody lives near a park, and you could probably go up there and rake some up because the parks is going to do that anyway. And get a bag or two or three of maple leaves, and you won't regret it. But either compost them as just leaves, although that will take 2 to 3 years, or you can mix them in your compost, which is easy to do, but we need to pay attention to the carbon to nitrogen ratio, which I will mention in we'll come back to that right after we do the garden stumper. Ty, you got my garden stumper ready to go there? We got a theme even. All right, tis time. Okay, well, this is kind of a, could be an easy one. It could make you think a little bit. Which, if any, of the following fruits are not native to the United States? Uh-huh. The anticipation builds.
Mm-hmm.
Strawberries, persimmons, grapes, pawpaws, black cherries. Okay, there's five of them for you. Which, if any, are not native? Strawberries, persimmon, grapes, pawpaws, or black cherries? 503-231-8187. And if you are the first caller, or if you are the caller with the first correct answer, you will win a gardening tool, a hand tool sharpening from Coley Farm Store at the corner of 42nd and Northeast Alberta Street. Okay. I will get to the garden, or to the composting, or the dirtbag dictionary term right now, which is carbon to nitrogen ratio. And this is important. And those that aren't really into composting but are into gardening will kind of probably have an idea of what I'm going to talk about here, but it's important if you want compost to compost quickly, meaning from 3 months to a year, then you have to pay attention to the ratio of the carbon and nitrogen molecules, if you will, that you're putting into the compost pile. And the ideal carbon to nitrogen ratio for a carbon for a compost pile is 30 to 1. That is to say, we want 30 times more carbon molecules than nitrogen, which seems like an awful lot. But that, as it turns out, is what the microorganisms that are in the compost pile need to fuel their bodies. We, humans, we need, maybe it's a similar ratio, maybe 30 times as much carbohydrates, if you will, to nitrogen sources, real squishy things like strawberries or vegetables or whatnot. And so when we're feeding the organisms in our compost pile, we want about 30 times as much carbon as nitrogen. Now, does that mean 30 times as much? No, because the volumes, carbon is much, much more dense. Think of trees or limbs or even leaves a little bit. If you took a stump or a log, let's say a log, and you just put it in your compost pile, not much is going to happen to that for decades, analogous to a tree falling in the forest. But if you chipped up that log and had a lot more surface area for the microorganisms to start eating it, then it would be much, much quicker. Maybe that you get the visual. So we gardeners have to learn, well, what's a carbon source and what's a nitrogen source. Sometimes it's taught about color. You know, you have browns and greens, and it's true to a point, but it falls down on some very important materials. Most carbon materials are brown, such as leaves or straw, hay, and branches if they're chipped up. But manure is also brown, but that's not considered a carbon source. That's a nitrogen source. Coffee grounds, well, they're brown, but they're not carbon mostly. They're more nitrogen. So the point is, when you mix all the stuff that goes into your compost pile together, you want to have that correct molecular, if you will, ratio of 30 to 1. And it turns out that if you say you put in 2 bags of leaves, you would need to put in about 1 bag of grass. So not 30 to 1, might be 2 to 1 as far as volume. If you have way, 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 way too much carbon, say it's all sawdust in there, then nothing's going to happen in your compost pile. If you have too little carbon, say you just put in a bag of grass in there, not much is going to happen either. Well, it'll start putrefying. And then there's also the particle size that matters, and the amount of water that you have in, and it should be about the consistency of a wrung-out sponge. So that's a little primer there on composting. And so when you're putting in leaves, put in some other nitrogen materials. And there's lists in gardening books and online about what are nitrogen materials. And coffee grounds are a good source. And if you don't have any other nitrogen, go to a coffee shop. I'm sure they'll allow you to use their leaves. Okay, so that's that on that. We wanted to talk a little bit about cover cropping going on in the farm and garden.
Yeah, Glenn. Well, one of the other amazing things that's happened this year, I mean, this has been a fun year, honestly. And I might have mentioned for a couple of years now, we've been planting a cover crop of triticale, which is a cross of rye and wheat, a grain, combined with common vetch, which grows up. The triticale provides something for the vetch, which is a vine to grow on, and the vetch fixes nitrogen in the soil, and triticale adds just a lot of organic matter to the soil. So it's a pretty neat cover crop, works pretty well for us, and we do it at a fairly large scale. This year, a couple of things happened. One, we have a neighbor who has some equipment to do this, and he came over, and we had such a nice stand that he combined part of it. And we, amazingly, I mean, we had, it was a, the, when he combined it, the he combined both the vetch and the triticale and got the mixture of seeds, which is not edible, really. Vetch is not such a great thing to eat, but but it was we created a lot more cover crop seed. And I don't think we harvested more than a couple of acres, and we had 10 tons.
Of seeds?
Yeah. I mean, it was incredible. I just, like, blew me away how much that, anyway, so that's far more than we could use. So we've sold a bunch of it to people. But then the other thing that happened was that in some of the other fields that we had this cover crop in, and even in the one that we combined, we mowed them when they were mature, when the triticale was probably 4 to 5 feet tall and the vetch was growing. And by that point, the vetch had mature seeds and pods, which some of which had opened. And so when we mowed it, a lot of that seed dropped on the ground. Well, and you know, the summer was pretty dry and everything was just sitting there for just straw on the ground. That's all it looked like for probably a month and a half and nothing. But guess what happened? It rained.
Yeah.
and we went to Italy just when it started to rain. We came home from Italy and within like 10 days later, and here's this green mat all over the field from the vetch seed in particular, which had germinated and was growing. So basically the cover crop reseeded itself.
Well, that's one of the drawbacks if you don't want it to do that.
And if you don't want to, of course.
You've got to get it out of there before it, before it seeds. And that's why I don't use vetch anymore, because I wasn't able to get it out of there.
Well, if we had mowed it earlier, of course, before the seeds had matured, it would have been fine. But we want it, and so so we don't have to go and do all the work on those fields. We'll see how it all works. It's the first time this has ever happened for us, so we're going to check it out and see how well it works. And eventually we could have some weed problems or something, but right now it looks really good.
Did you I had a question there, and then I'll have to come back to it.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's too late to plant.
It's not.
Certain cover crops, you know, it's mid-October here now.
I talked to some friends who farm south near Albany. Recently we went out to dinner, and they were telling us that as long as the soil is not too wet, you can plant even in November.
Well, I know with rye you can do that, but I don't know about the legumes.
I think vetch would work. But I don't know. But I'm pretty certain you could plant now and until the end of the month. I mean, if your soil is in reasonable shape where you could plant something, I would do it.
When would you have typically planted the vetch?
Now.
Oh, okay.
October. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. 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 And you'd normally plow it. Or disc the soil.
If we were going to plant our larger fields, we disc and harrow, and then we have a planter that plants it. But of course, for a small garden, you don't need to. You don't have that equipment.
Yeah.
But, you can just use a rake if you've got your soil in reasonable shape, and just rake in the seed on the surface.
That's why you made the comment that the weed problem, you don't know about that yet, because generally, if you were disking, you might take care of all the weeds ahead of time.
Yes, right. But as you know, the ground, because it was so dry, I mean, there was nothing growing on that on that ground.
Well, the same would hold true for weed seeds too,
Yes, of course. Of course, they're all waiting.
I thought the question is will you need to reseed more on these fields that have come up voluntarily?
We're not going to.
Yeah. Uh-huh. It's a good experiment.
It's an experiment.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, great. Okay, well, we'll expect updates on that.
Sure.
This is certainly next spring.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, well, let's now talk about olive news. You've been certain places. What did you learn?
Well, olives are fun.
Well, it's more important. I understand there's a big shortage in Spain, which is the biggest producer of olives or olive oil.
Yeah, so this is interesting. So we had two doses of olives, in a sense. We went to an olive conference, a symposium in California in September, and then about a week, 10 days after after that conference, we went to Italy. So we really got our dose of olives. The conference in California was interesting because, for one thing, they focused on olive oil, which is, in Oregon, not such a, I mean, it's, sure, you can maybe make some olive oil here, but there's plenty of olive oil made around the world, including California, and the climates in those places are, I think, more suitable for it. So our focus at Northwoods Nursery is not olive oil, but table olives to eat. And the conference in California was, to my opinion, too focused on the olive oil, so that was a little disappointing. And another thing that was disappointing was that the caterer that they hired, there was no olives to eat. We ate some sort of rather disappointingly bland food of just kind of, you know.
Well, that could be the organizer there too.
And whatever went wrong with that was so. But you know, we met some interesting people from Portugal and Spain and you know, places, and of course Italy, which we knew people from there already. So that was fun. But then we went to Italy. And our goal, it was a short trip, shorter than usual, and our goal was primarily to walk through a collection of olive varieties and talk to people in that region. This is in the southern part of Italy, and we wanted to see, in Oregon, because of our climate, there's a couple of very important things about olives here. One is that they need to ripen early, because we don't have the heat. You know, a place like Italy, where they have summer temperatures are, you know, in the 90s, and the nighttime temperatures don't go below 70, that's a lot more warmth than we have here.
Well, you know, if I can ask the question, why is it important for them to produce early?
So they can ripen in our climate, because we don't have a long enough growing season for many varieties. And so my partner Lane and I, we walked down rows of olive trees and we looked at them. And if they had black fruit, and this was in the latter part of September, we thought, oh, that's an interesting variety.
These were all different varieties?
All different varieties. So, it's one of the world's largest collection of olive varieties.
Not a farm.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Right. And then we did visit a couple of farms, too. And our visits to Italy have been to cooler regions and learning about how they deal with it. One place we went to, not on this trip, but an earlier one, they actually harvest, they harvest olives sometimes when there's snow on the ground. So, this is all part of long ago started project of looking for olives that we could grow here, and methods of using of growing them here in the Pacific Northwest and or in the western side of the Cascade Mountains, and our work now is. There are varieties at our place we are testing. There's a planting at the North Willamette Research and Extension Center in Aurora that they're testing different varieties there. And I think within the next year or two, there's going to be a lot more information. But there are olives right now that you can plant and are pretty reliable here. And again, I'm focused again on table olives. This is for the homeowner. I mean, to go make olive oil on a home basis is you could spend a lot of work to grow a couple of, you know, and make a very small amount
of
oil.
Tablespoons of oil.
Yeah, right.
Is it the same olive that one would use for each?
There are a lot of them are the same. They call them dual purpose. There are some that are particularly useful for table olives, the larger varieties, for example, that they use for that and not really used for oil. And then many of the oil varieties are quite small and very productive, of course. They just want a lot of fruit, and they harvest them mechanically, and it's a whole other deal for that.
When you and Lorraine were walking through these orchards and finding black or ripe olives, do you have some of those varieties now, or will you be able to get some of those varieties?
Yeah, well, some are already in the U.S. Yeah, and we are working on getting others.
Were any of them do you have planted now?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Some of those that you saw there.
Yeah. No, there's a collection in California. And what was interesting for us was to see them ripe in at this early point in Italy gave us more information about which ones to select. I mean, we'd already had some, and it reaffirmed our our interest in those varieties, and that's what we're planting, we're in the process of planting our own variety trial, which is going to be focused entirely upon early ripening table olives.
When you say early ripening, give us a idea of when that might be.
Well, October. I mean,
so it's pretty late, really,
by our other fruit standards. But yeah. by mid October. I mean, the main thing is you want to get the olives ripe before the rainy season starts in November.
They ripen on the tree.
They ripen on the tree, right? And then you want to cure. And then curing them is another interesting process too. You know, once you have the olive, an olive right off the tree is not edible. You could call it ripe. You know, I might call it ripe, but it's not edible, so we'll call it premature. I like that one. And then you have to go through a process to get the bitterness out of it. And I'm still learning about that from different ideas from folks about how to do it. So, and right now there may be some listeners that have some olives on some trees here,
it'd be fun to hear from those. If we do have time for a call or two, if you do have olives and want to chime in as what your experience has been, 503-231-8187. That's also the number that you'd call if you want to take a stab at which, if any, of the fruits are not native to the U.S. 503-231-8187. Also, once again, we'll just, before we skedaddle out of here, if you would like to contribute to KBOO and become a member,
can keep us on the air.
That's right.
Okay, my turn. Okay, well, so the way I would probably do it, because I'm kind of an email addict, is I would go to KBOO, KBOO.FM, /give, and I would give. And if I was a little higher tech, which I'm not, I would text KBOO to 44321 and do whatever they tell you to do after doing that. And if I was sending letters, which I also don't do very often, I would mail one, including in it a check to KBOO, KBOO, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Portland, Oregon, 97214.
And we believe there's a match going on now.
And I heard this morning on another show that there's a fairly large match. I heard something like $14,000 or something that there was on the table. And if you contribute, your money will be matched by that. So that's really a pretty neat deal. Well,
our goal is $50,000. No, $55,000. And you can probably find out the last minute up-to-date tally on that when you go to kboo.fm/give. Okay, good morning. You're with the Dirtbag.
Oh, good morning. I just wanted to guess. Is it persimmon?
Nope.
No?
Persimmons are native. Now, they're not the... Jim can tell you.
Sure. There's two main kinds of edible persimmon, and your guess would be correct if we were talking about Asian persimmons, which are more common, but their Diospyros virginiana is a... it's called American persimmon, and it's a different species, and it grows wild, and we have cultivated varieties, too, of that. So it's mostly on the East Coast and Midwest.
Yes, the virginiani, maybe that's a hint.
Okay.
Where it grows.
Where it grows.
Well, you said on the east coast.
Yeah, Virginiana is Diospyros virginiana, the American persimmon, is native to the East Coast and into the Midwest, and it's quite common there. And
there's one in a neighborhood that I run by, and so that's how I knew about it, mostly. But they're small, but they're edible.
Boy, not only edible.
Okay.
Right now, I'm eating them off the trees, and they are delicious. But they are only they're smaller than an Asian persimmon.
Much smaller.
But very sweet. and you have to eat them when they're soft, but I think they're great.
I think squirrels and whatnot, birds might get to them eventually, but the chestnuts are now, so the squirrels are busy with those and leaving everything else in my garden alone. So I appreciate that. Yeah. Well, thanks. Can't remember. Liz, it?
Yes.
Yeah. Appreciate you playing. Okay, looks like we have another call coming in here.
While we're waiting for that, I should mention about one nice thing about Italy is the food. You know, there's we had some really delicious pizza there. Pretty darn fun place.
Good deal.
Yeah.
Good deal. Yeah, that's okay. Who did you say, Merrick? Eric. Eric, do you have a guess or a question? Dumbfounded. All right, the question, though, is which of the following fruit, if any, are not native to the U.S.? Strawberries, persimmon. Well, we know persimmon now. That's not the answer. See, if everybody guesses, then pretty soon there's going to be the right answer. Grapes, pawpaws, and black cherries. Well, we're just about out of time, Jim. Anything you want more to say about olives?
I think we covered it pretty well today,
okay.
And we'll keep talking about it.
In the
hello.
Okay, you're back.
Oh yeah, sorry about that.
That's all right.
I'll say black cherries. I know you're running out of time.
Black cherries are native to the U.S. But just black cherries. But good guess.
Yeah, that's great.
Because that's kind of unusual.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, but I had an olive tree question at all, but I may be running out of time.
No, you got a minute or less.
Okay. Well, yeah, I've got an Albertina. I think that's how you pronounce it. I got from Portland Nursery about 7 years ago, and it's finally putting out some decent amount of olives, but they're still all green, and I don't have. I've been told that I found out later that you're supposed to have maybe a second olive tree to help the pollination, but it finally did it this year. But there's only a few that have actually turned black, and I'm just wondering if you can still harvest them when they're green.
Yes, the answer is yes. And if you have some turning black, I would say you could probably harvest them all. And because green olives are fine too, and you can cure green olives. They don't have to be black. When they're firm, you know. So this is mid October. Well, we're not. Would we say yes, mid October? Yeah, we're getting pretty. Yeah, so I'd say, you could harvest them. Sure.
Okay, I've had green olives in Spain before, so I know it's possible, but I just didn't know if there was varieties that you're just supposed to harvest when they're green or when they're black, but it sounds like when they're ideal, it's black, but...
They usually will have a change in color, go from a darker green to a lighter green as they ripen. And as I said, if you have black fruit on the tree or even close to black, even a change in color where they're getting a little dark, that's okay. I mean, then you can cure those olives and they'll be delicious.
Oh, cool! Right. Excellent. Well,
and you don't
I'll
need
try
a,
do that in the next week or so.
You don't need another variety.
Well, Arbequina is reportedly self-fertile, so that's probably why you have fruit. And they're wind pollinated, so the tree obviously got enough movement of pollen around from those flowers.
Just needed to get big enough. Okay, yeah. we better skedaddle out of here. Okay, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
All right. Well, we'll either. Maybe somebody will email us the answer to the question, but if not, we'll answer it next month.
Yep.
Right. Okay, Jim, thank you very much for all the great information. It has been a busy month, certainly, or 2 months. Ty, thank you very much for helping us out there. This is Glenn Andreessen. This is the Dirtbag. We'll leave with another. It's not COVID. This is the new Riders of the Purple Sage. I don't need no doctor.
I don't need no doctor. 'cause I know what's ailing me. I've been too long away from my baby. I'm coming down, I'm coming down with the misery.
You're listening to KB.
Listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next is Jazz Lives, right after these news headlines.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM.